Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is the Soundcheck Podcast from WNYC in New York.
This is Soundcheck. I'm John Schaefer. For most Americans, this music means one thing: the Olympics. And as we hit the midway point in the Sochi Games, we've all heard this song quite a few times in the past week. But the story behind the music that we hear at the Olympics is a pretty interesting one. And here to tell us more about it is Dr. Bill Gugold, Professor Emeritus at the University of Akron, and author of the book 100 Years of Olympic Music, 1896 to 1996. Hi, Bill.
Hello, John. How are you today?
I'm well. I guess your book is going to need a little updating. 1996, that's a while ago. But a lot of the music that was covered in the book we continue to hear, like this piece called Bugler's Dream. Tell us about that.
Well, the piece was actually written well before the Olympics. It was part of a larger work that Arnaud had written called Charge Suite. And ABC picked the piece up and used it for their Olympic coverage. And for many of us, my generation, that was the first Olympic music that we heard because of the television coverage by ABC early on.
So this was in the 1960s that ABC started using Leo Arnaud's piece.
Yes, they also used it for some of their Wide World of Sports broadcasts.
Yeah, I kind of remember that. But now, where did the idea come from that John Williams, the famous Star Wars, you know, Jurassic Park film composer, wrote the Olympic theme music? Where did that idea come from?
Well, he wrote a theme, was commissioned to write music that was played at the opening ceremonies in Los Angeles in 1984. And I think that piece just took off after that. It was very popular. And it had John Williams' characteristic great melodies and a nice lyric middle section and a good fanfare opening and closing. And I think it just it sort of stuck.
And now it literally does kind of stick to the earlier piece, the Leo Arnaud piece, right? You hear the two of them sort of segueing one into the other on TV.
Yeah, I was a little surprised about that because NBC has the Olympics now, but I guess ABC gave up the rights to the Arnaud piece, and then NBC picked it up. And actually, in 1996, for the Some of the Heroes CD that John Williams did with the theme he wrote for 1996 called Some of the Heroes, they commissioned an arrangement of the Arnaud and the 1984 Williams piece. And it segues right in from Arnaud into the Williams. And I think NBC did that because when they used it for television coverage, it had the same ambience, the same orchestration, the same recording flair, and they didn't have to worry about it in the same key. So, it would make sense to arrange them together if they were going to use them together in the television coverage.
So an easy way to tell the two apart is the Leo Arnaud piece, Bugler's Dream, is the one that begins with the big booming kettle drums. Boom, 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 boom. The John Williams piece is called Trumpet Fanfare for a reason, because it features the trumpets and was written for the opening of the 1984 Games. Speaking with Bill Gugold, Professor Emeritus of Music at the University of Akron and author of the book 100 Years of Olympic Music. So as you say, today NBC uses both. They start with the Arnaud piece with the booming kettle drums. They go right into the John Williams fanfare with the trumpets. But this is strictly an American thing, right?
That's correct. I just did an email survey of some of the other members of the International Society of Olympic Historians a couple of weeks ago, and I said, so in your country,
sorry,
what do you
hear? Did you say there's an International Society of Olympic Historians?
Yes, it's an Olympic geek group, I guess.
And okay, all right. So, and what did they have to say?
Well, I got responses from about 5 or 6 countries, and interestingly, in New Zealand, they associate Copland's Fanfare for the Common Man, both the regular brass choir version, which as it was originally written, and also the Emerson, Lake and Palmer version, which is also popular in England, actually, as an Olympic theme. And then a lot of countries still think "Chariots of Fire," with Evangelist piece, is used a lot. It's also been used in Canada and England and Brazil. That's what they believe when they think of Olympic music. They think of, because their television coverage uses the Evangelist "Chariots of Fire." That's their Olympic song.
So, which, I mean, Chariots of Fire from the Olympics-themed 1981 film of the same name. Let's hear some of that music, which has become associated with the Olympics in other countries, by the Greek-born, London-based electronic musician known as Vangelis. Bit of music from Chariots of Fire, soundtrack to the 1981 film of the same name about the Olympics, about runners in an earlier version of the Olympics, from the Greek-born composer whose real name is Vangelis Papathanasiou, but you will never see that name on any of his records. Just uses his first name, Vangelis, or inevitably pronounced Vangelis here in the States. Bill Gugold with us on Soundcheck, talking about 100 years of Olympic music. And so far, Bill, the music we've been talking about is associated not with the Olympics themselves, but with broadcasts, whether here in the States or, as with the Vangelis piece, in various other countries like Brazil. But people might be surprised. I know I was surprised to learn that the Olympics used to actually have arts competitions and that well-known composers would enter these competitions.
I think probably what happened with the Olympic arts competition, it wasn't just music, it was art and drama and literature and all of the arts that we think of today. But the amateur rules sort of made it difficult because they stuck to that pretty much earlier on in the Olympics, not today where we have the dream teams.
Right.
We didn't have a music dream team that competed in the early Olympics, unfortunately. And so a lot of the pieces were for the competitions weren't written by composers of very high standing. In fact, it was more prestigious to become part of the judging panel. So, for instance, in the 20s, one of the Olympics, the judging panel included Stravinsky and Fauré, and it was an unbelievable high-powered list of adjudicators. But
wow,
they received, you know, all these scores from all over the world, sometimes hundreds. And they might have been written by a sixth grader or, you know, somebody who just liked the Olympics and thought they could write a poem and set it to music and would do it themselves. And so there are very few pieces from those early Olympic arts competitions in the music area that stand today. About the only one that's still heard any is a piece by the Czech composer Josef Suk. And it was called Toward a New Life, and it won the silver medal in Los Angeles in 1932. One of the stipulations in the arts competitions that they didn't have to award medals in any of the categories. So some years there were no medals given in a category, and some years, such as 1932 in LA, they just gave the Suk piece a silver medal.
So it was like, yeah, your piece is good. We'll give you a silver for it.
yeah, that's right.
Let's hear a little bit. Now, I mean, Yosef Suk, you know, classical music fans will know this name. This guy was not an amateur. So
that's right.
Let's hear, this is actually, in fact, John Williams and the Boston Pops performing Yosef Suk's Toward a New Life. That is some music from Yosef Suk, the Czech composer who was also a well-known violinist and who won, sort of, the Olympic Games arts competition in 1932 with that piece called Toward a New Life. And as Bill Gugold told us, he was awarded a silver medal rather than a gold for that piece, but he was the winner of the competition that year. Why did these art competitions associated with the Olympics die out, Bill?
I think they were probably just too cumbersome. You know, as I mentioned, some years they would have 100 I think one year they had 300 compositions submitted from all over the world. And just the logistics of going through all of those pieces and evaluating them and the quality was not always that good. So in the 1950s then, actually the last arts competition was at the London Games in 1948. And so in the 1950s, the International Olympic Committee decided to require the host cities to have arts Olympiads, arts festivals associated with the games instead of having the arts contests.
Mm-hmm. Which makes a certain amount of sense. It also allows the IOC to actually choose composers to commission. You know, I know Leonard Bernstein wrote a piece, not for the Olympics, but for an IOC Congress. Is that right?
It was commissioned by the German Olympic Committee, and it was performed at an Olympic Congress in Germany. And it's titled Olympic Hymn, but it's never been played at an actual Olympic Games.
Yeah. It was written for the 1981, which is not an Olympic year, the 1981 IOC Congress in Baden-Baden, West Germany. Let's hear some. Bernstein's Olympic Hymn. Bill, that's pretty grand sounding stuff for a piece that never got played at the Olympics.
It's very good. It's very good.
For the 1981 International Olympic Congress in Baden-Baden, West Germany, Bill Gugold is with us on Soundcheck, professor emeritus of music at the University of Akron, author of the book 100 Years of Olympic Music, 1896 to 1996. And Bill, as recently as the 90s, I can remember, you know, contemporary composers being asked to write music for the Olympics. Michael Torkey, New York-based composer, wrote Javelin for the Olympics in Atlanta, for example. These days, it seems like we're getting more pop music tailored to the Olympics, like Muse, who wrote their song Survival for the London Games, and Celine Dion did something for the Atlanta Games. Has that sort of taken the place of you know, commissioning orchestral or big band music?
I think when you look at London, you'd say that's the case. I would call London kind of the Pops Games because they the opening ceremony, closing ceremony used a lot of of popular music. They also use some classical pieces as well. I guess I would say the Russian example so far, we've only had the opening ceremony, but it shifted away from popular music to more classical. And of course, that's what Russia's noted for.
Right.
You know, it has some great Russian classical composers, and they certainly showcased that a lot in the opening ceremonies with the music of Stravinsky. The Rite of Spring used a lot. You know, Tchaikovsky, which, you know, two great Russian composers, different centuries, but great orchestral composers. For those of us that love classical music, it's a relief to see the during the opening ceremonies how much classical music was used, and ballet works perfectly for that sort of a situation. So,
right,
it was very, very nice.
What'd you make of Anna Netrebko, the star Russian soprano, singing at the opening of the games?
Well, I loved that. I thought that was a good rendition of the Olympic hymn.
Yep,
it's usually done by a full chorus, so I thought having a featured soloist and then backed up by a male chorus, I thought that was very, very unique. And of course, you know, Russian male voices, you know, that sort of fit this ceremony really well, to have her singing the opera with the operatic quality voice, and then the men's chorus, male chorus behind that. I thought was it gave it a real Russian flavor. It was also at a very slow tempo, which I thought was very difficult, and they really performed it very well.
Yeah, she's terrific. And the Olympic hymn, that goes back all the way back, doesn't it, to the first modern games?
It was composed in before the first games in 1896. And in the early part of the 20th century, the IOC toyed with having other more updated or more modern, they considered that time, Olympic hymn. And so they had some competitions and had other composers write different hymns. In fact, Richard Strauss wrote the Olympic hymn for the 1936 games in Berlin. And but I think World War II got in the way for that. The Germans had declared that the Olympic hymn for all time, and that only lasted about 3 or 4 years.
Yeah.
And that was the end of that. And then in the 1950s, the IOC, after experimenting with some other composers writing some hymns for a few of the games, went back to the original, the Samaras version.
Spyridon Samaras, the Greek composer of the original Olympic hymn, which is once again the anthem that's heard at the opening of each Olympic Games. And Bill Gugold with us on Soundcheck, talking about over 100 years of Olympic music. The thing everyone's talking about this time around, though, Bill, have you seen and heard the Russian police choir singing Daft Punk's Get Lucky?
Yeah, that's amazing.
This will be, I think, for many of us, the enduring musical legacy of the Sochi Games. But there is so much more behind the musical history of the Olympics. And, Bill, it's been great hearing some of it from you today. Thanks very much for being with us on Soundcheck.
Thank you very much, John. Enjoy talking with you.
The Soundcheck podcast is supported by people just like you. Make a contribution or become a monthly sustainer. Just go to soundcheck.org and click on support. Thanks for listening. I'm John Schaefer.
Your gift keeps on giving. What is this so feeling?